Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, we've got a group of long-time friends who are all of us qualify as illiterati, I think, as well as the glitterati, for that matter. We're fancy and we're well-read. And so we're going to do a theme that doesn't make like direct conceptual sense, but everything in this episode will be based around the word mar or the letters M-A-R in that order appearing in words. So that's going to be fun, right? Everybody loves when parts of words appear in other words. And that's the show this week. So our first guest is a first-time guest and a zero-time listener, or actually one-time listener. One-time listener, Jenny?
I know I listened to Brian's thing.
Yeah, okay. So that counts.
One,
definitely. I got a thing.
At least one other one.
I got a thing.
You definitely partially listened to at least one episode. Jenny Morse is a professor. She is a poet. She is a teacher of the grammatical arts to the many droves of Americans who have no fucking idea how to communicate at all. And she's on the show. Welcome, Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And how does it feel to be a person who has to tell other people how to communicate in just the most basic way?
Mostly fun, because I get to tell people all the things that I know. And at least in my business, I don't have to grade them or determine whether they learned anything.
Which is phenomenal. And I assume telling people all the things you know takes years. So you have clients that literally have not, like, they're going to die before you finish working with them.
I have a few clients who have subscribed to visit me on a regular basis so that they can just ask me questions about how they should start their emails and things like that.
Cool. And do you have like a delivery box service for this as well for people who want to subscribe, but they don't want to visit you directly?
Well, the visit is on Zoom, but I also have like on-demand classes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Great.
I'm trying to reach as many people as possible and help them communicate better.
And I'm being way too much of a smartass for your earnest answers to these questions about your business. No, I think it's awesome. Do you mind? Can I say the name of your business?
Sure.
It's Appendence Inc., right? Yeah. You can follow them on Facebook. Fantastic organization. Good opportunity to stop writing emails that leave your coworkers confused and start writing emails that leave your coworkers going, oh, I know how to do that and I'll do it efficiently and quickly and stop being dumb.
Yes.
My emphasis, not the company's. Our second guest is a returning guest. He has been on several times, including most recently on the 1980s music episode. He is a baller shot caller and poet, as well as being a father to humans and cats. It's Brian Dixon. Brian, welcome back.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I am a piece of scrap at this point.
Okay. That's, I mean, your emphasis, not mine. Glad to have you back on. This is probably the quickest you've been back on the show ever. It's usually like a 50 episode gap. So this is barely even a thigh gap.
I need time to recover. What are you going to say?
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, I mean, I really put people through the paces. It's brutal on this show. Thank you for being back.
Yes.
We also have sitting in the A Vague Idea mezzanine, which this is the first time anybody's ever bought a ticket for these amazing seats. But she is sitting where Waldorf and Stadler were going to sit. But both of those puppets, it turns out, they're like 150 and they're dead. So taking the Peanut Gallery seat this evening is another poet. Hey, guess what? Everybody here's a fucking poet. Isn't that a theme? she's a poet. She is also a professor. She is a cat parent, as well as a soon-to-be parent of a human. I mean, we hope, right? First ultrasound.
I think so.
A human. Probably
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And this person who will not necessarily be participating, but may. We'll see. We'll see how emphatic my energy is and how much I can pull her in. Yep. This is Jen Moore. Jen,
hi.
Welcome. Hello.
Thank you. I'm excited to see you and hear you and be here.
I'm excited to see you as well, because it's been, God, it's been years now at this point. We're all too scattered. We're just grain or diaspora or whatever. We're all over the place.
Dust in the wind.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Which is terrible. It's terrible to be dust in the wind. It's not an efficient way to be dust at all. So welcome and enjoy. Feel free to chime in whenever you feel like.
Okay.
We're going to get kooky. We're going to get kooky. So I'm going to start, Jenny and Brian, with the opening question on the theme of Mar. Okay. If you had no choice in the matter, which of these two places would you rather be trapped? Inside a marsupial's pouch or at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago?
That seems obvious.
Well, obviously what, Jenny? Obviously what?
Are we starting with just like a low, easy question? Just like, would you rather be in this cozy, comfortable, warm environment or have to be with some...
That pouch is probably filled with mucus. You have to keep that in mind.
You know?
Still not selling you on it. Yeah.
There's no way I'm going to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah. Good job. Great. Very good. Ryan, what do you think? Marsupial's pouch, Mar-a-Lago in Florida.
If said person or said implied person was elected, I would have gone to the marsupial pouch for sure. No questions asked. I mean, we're talking about going into a warm, cozy place. Mucus or no mucus, I'm in.
All right. That's an endorsement you can take to the bank. Literally, if you go into a bank and say mucus or no mucus, I'm in, they're probably going to ask you to leave.
I mean, you have two strong votes for cover me in mucus rather than deal with this other person.
I think you're both absolutely correct. I'm going to give you each 1 point. Jen, do you have any feeling on this? Mar-a-Lago, marsupial's pouch? Do you care?
I'm fully in agreement with both Jenny and Brian. You couldn't pay me to get even within the state of Florida that
America's
close.
Wang. Not interested.
Yeah, I will stay in the pouch till the day I die before I get close to Mar-a-Lago.
Fantastic. Okay, Jen, you're going to get a point too. Great job on the opening question. You all did wonderfully. We're going to jump right into round number one.
The paying viewers who are in the mezzanine to participate. It's like improv.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now I'm in the show. Yeah, Jen, do you want to name a profession, a location, and maybe like... You're a barista in Australia and you're surfing.
Go.
Oi, mate, this mocha's got me down.
Oh, dear God.
Right? No, that's good. Okay. Well, let's just jump. We'll jump into round number one. Brian, we're going to start with you. Do you have a vague idea about the Martian Manhunter?
The Martian Manhunter?
Yes.
Oh, wait. My gosh.
Is it Martian Man hyphenated or Manhunter hyphenated?
No hyphens. Martian is one word. Manhunter is the second word. And it is a proper name. Yeah. Martian Manhunter, proper name.
You know, this was the latest Halloween costume fad, you know, kind of like Slender Man.
All right. Yeah.
It was promoted by a kid on YouTube. Every parent's going for YouTube fame with their kid to pay for college. And so, you know, they got him into, you know, Space Jam and Marvin the Martian. And, you know, let's go hunt for Marvin.
Okay.
And so it became an internet sensation.
Because obviously, like Tim Donaghy, there was the Marvin the Martian referee scandal, and a lot of people put a lot of money on that Space Jam game. And they were like, hey, why is this team allowed to steal all these NBA players' abilities?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, Marvin the Martian was in the mafia. I mean, we know this for a fact.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. Very good. Jenny, the Martian Manhunter. Do you have a vague idea about the Martian Manhunter?
I am pretty sure that the Martian Manhunter is actually the first evidence of aliens here.
Okay.
And they've been killing various humans, so hunting people. But mostly so far taking out some of the bad ones, And so it's all good. We're happy that the aliens have landed, that they're helping cull our population, and that they're doing it in the nicest way possible. I think, you know, it's a welcome connection.
Just to have someone from another planet killing our less wanted.
You know, as long as they're taking out the bad people, we're good.
Sure, yeah.
I've submitted a list. So far, none of it has been taken care of, but I turned in a list.
And I've looked at the list, and it's way kinder than like Nixon's enemies list was. So yeah. I think we're in good hands. I think we're definitely in good hands.
Take out people that nobody likes.
There you go. Yeah. You're Mr. Potato Heads, you're Dr. Seuss's, you know, all the people.
Cancel culture, right?
Yeah.
The highest form of cancel culture. But it's just like Martians coming and deciding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's actually the most efficient way to deal with it.
Yeah. Ask somebody else.
Right.
Hire a hitman. Do your dirty work.
Very good. Very good. I'm going to give you each 1 point.
It's the best calling program ever developed.
Right.
The Martian Manhunter is a DC Comics superhero. He has essentially the same superpowers as Superman, but he is green and wears kind of like a black bodysuit with a cape. And he's pretty cool. He's interesting. He's like very morally centered in a way that's interesting. He's just sort of like a barometer character in the DC universe. So very good. Yeah, you're both getting 1 point. You were both fantastic.
How many points were available on that question?
I mean, I don't even know.
Like 1 out of 10 points?
Yeah, I like I said, I mean, I host the show and the points, like I'm really just a conduit for the points. So the universe tells me. And the universe said 1 point.
Very good.
So now we're going to go into round number two. And Jenny, do you have a vague idea about a martyr complex?
That is when you don't feel good about yourself unless you are, you know, putting yourself in a position where doing good for others, but they have to recognize that you're doing it for them. So state of mind in which you continually do things you don't want to do just so that other people will acknowledge that you do them.
Okay. All right. Brian, anything to add about a martyr complex?
Well, we're talking about, let me just throw myself down in front of the Romans, get myself into heaven.
Yeah. Throw me to the lions.
No, I'm thinking about the early church and they're still trying to figure out like all these documents that they have in their hands and what is church doctrine. And I'm like, well, we got to die to go where that guy's going. So let's go do this. And sacrifice that sense. But I also like Jenny too. The martyr complex is like, it's kind of like victimhood. Like I am going to do all this work and not get credit for it. And then I'm just going to get mad at everybody.
Yeah. So basically it's being a writer, right? Too soon. I liked what you were saying.
Can I add?
Yeah.
There's a part of me that wishes, based on Brian's answer, that martyr complex is like a building.
I was just going to say that.
Martyr complex.
Welcome to the martyr complex. You've all decided that you want to give yourselves over for a greater cause, and we're here to process you.
Right, exactly.
We're going to make you into some IKEA furniture because it's like Soylent Green, but it's the martyr complex. Yes. In psychology, a person who has a martyr complex desires the feeling of being a martyr for their own sake. So they seek out suffering or persecution because it either feeds a psychological need or a desire to avoid responsibility. So yeah, I got to be the victim. That's what I want to do.
I got no accountability here.
Exactly.
But they didn't include in that definition that you want other people to recognize how much you're suffering.
Mm. Which is essential to martyrdom. You're absolutely correct. I mean, I'm not quibbling with you on what you said, because you're right. You can't be a martyr without an audience.
Which DSVM did you get that definition from?
From the DSM Wiki?
Or DSM, yeah. You know, they update that thing. DSM-4, DSM-5.
I think we're still on 5 and have been for like 20 years.
Sorry, yeah. I reversed those letters. DSM, not DSVM. ESMV.
Yeah. You were just, you made it sound a little more Roman numerical, which is cool.
I got my Roman numerals.
Because it could have been a U, but it's a V because they didn't have, you know, they didn't have curves back then.
So many things.
Pythagoras said, no curves, only triangles.
This is all part of the murder complex building.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the additions of the DSM.
The martyr complex building has to be all corners, right? Because you have to be able to be pushed into a corner to successfully be a martyr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. I'm going to give myself a point for that. Okay. So Brian, 2 points. Jenny, 1 point. Jen, do you have anything you want to throw in about martyr complex?
I like the building idea.
Cool. All right.
Also, I thought we were way past DSM-5. I swear we're at like 12 now. I feel like there's so many editions of it, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm honestly not sure. I remember we were on 4 when I was in high school because 4 still had homosexuality in it as a disorder. And then they were like, hey, 5's coming out in 2006. And then I didn't know if they updated since because I honestly, my Psychology Today subscription lapsed and I just haven't got back into
Same. You know? I will be looking this up and I will come back with a report.
And Psychology Today, if you're listening, if you just offer me that free tote bag, I'll get the subscription again. But I still haven't seen that tote bag offer. And they should know. They should know these tricks. So very good. We're going to go into our first game. It's time for the Thunderdome. And this week in the Thunderdome, we have 2 fantastic alcoholic beverages fighting to the death. So Brian, I'll start with you. Who wins in a fight between a margarita and a martini in a battle to the death in the Thunderdome?
Well, if it's margarita on Cinco de Mayo, it's, you know, that's hands down winner.
Oh, but sure,
if it's a martini overall in general, martini, it's, yeah, you can't compete.
So Cinco de Mayo is like the one day the generals beat the Globetrotters, but otherwise, run away.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, martini. Martini sounds good. Jenny, what do you think? Margarita versus martini. What's that fight look like and who wins?
I'm trying to find I feel like because of the martini's association with James Bond, you put James Bond in the Thunderdome with anybody and he wins, right? So
it's kind
of unfair there.
It's true. He's going to win or he's going to seduce.
Yeah. On the other hand, if the contest is how many I could drink, it's definitely margaritas. Way more of those than martinis.
Sure. Yeah. There's more like, you know, lemon content and ice.
Sweet things, umbrellas, you know. Ice, like hydration.
And it's green, multicolors.
Yeah. And I also personally hate martini glasses. I think martini glasses are the worst invention ever. Why would you make a glass that you fill it to the top and then you expect people to move it around without it spilling? I mean, what is the point of this thing?
Yeah. Tiny little stem.
You're supposed to stand in the corner and look cool.
I guess you're not supposed to drink it. You're supposed to spill it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's meant to be just fought with or over. I don't know.
A little olive in the bottom or something.
Yeah. It's really just an olive conveyance. That's probably what the truth is. What are we going to do with these olives? Well, we better invent a drink to move some olives because we've got way too many olives.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, right? You're in a battle here. Margarita comes out ready to roll. Salted rim, so you know that any wound that it inflicts, you're getting salt in that wound. That is a mess. That is a real mess right there. You're in a lot of pain. But, you know, and then it depends on the martini, right? Is the martini shaken? Because if it's shaken, it's already not ready to fight. Nobody wants to come in shaken or stirred, really. In either case, you're not settled.
So maybe its superpower is like, you know, dizzying the margarita.
Okay, there you go.
Spins it around.
Plus, you do have the seductive power of olives, which we cannot underestimate.
I don't know. Like, the margarita, though, probably has some cool dance moves. maybe sings a little bit. I don't know. I think, like, the margarita is a party. The martini is, I don't know. It's formal.
The martini's like, it's either James Bond or it's a sad 60-year-old man looking at his record collection and wishing he was 30 again?
Sure.
I don't know. I might be putting too much on it. Hey, great job. Jen, any thoughts about a battle between a martini and a margarita?
I have so many thoughts. So, A, I want to go back to Jenny's comment. You're so right that a martini glass is the absolutely most impractical glass that's ever been created.
Yeah.
Nothing should be drunk out of a martini glass. Like, you have to lean down and sip it before you can even pick it up. So the glass is just super impractical. If the battle's between a margarita...
I think it's just a why.
Oh, just a what?
It's just a why.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a battle between a margarita and a martini, I feel like if the margarita is frozen, then there it's not a contest that the martini would win hands down, because a frozen margarita just seems like it's just there to party, is not there for a fight, right?
It can't move. It can't move
yeah,
fast.
It's just blood. Not, yeah. And the martini is like, I got this, like super professional, like not going to dick around. Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on whether or not the margarita is frozen or not. If it's frozen, martini wins hands down.
That's a great point.
My thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. You. Yeah. Cause I'm a frozen margarita is just throwing haymakers. That's all it's got, right? Like its entire self is coming at you at once. Cause anybody right, who's so- tried to drink a frozen margarita, it just flies in your face. It's a disaster.
That's why they give you a straw.
Yeah. Any drink that needs help.
They should give you a straw with your martini.
Well, yeah, they should. But no straw would even work in those stupid conical glasses.
just the short little ones that spin around on the outside. You need tasting it with your mouth.
You really need like a periscope style straw that's like powered. So it just finds your face.
It clips to the edge of the glass.
Yeah.
Clip on mini straws just for martinis because the glasses are so awful.
I think we have a business.
You guys are hating too much. Hating way too much.
Uh-oh. Brian's got friends in the martini lobby.
Well, I'm a fan of stemless glassware anyway.
There you go. Yeah. If you have a glass that you can always set down, like you can always just set it down. You can drop it and it's probably fine.
Yeah.
If it's short and round, throw it down. If it's tall and stemmed, something else that rhymes. Great job on the Thunderdome. Brian, I'm going to give you 2 points. Jenny, I'm giving you 3 points. And Jen, I'm giving you 2 points.
You're on the board.
On the board. So we're going to jump into round number 3. Jenny, do you have a vague idea about Margaret Thatcher?
I have watched The Crown.
All right.
So yes. I have an idea that Margaret Thatcher was played by Gillian Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, Margaret Thatcher must know about the X-Files.
That's an exciting, if that's true, what an amazing, like totally different view of Margaret Thatcher history should take.
Right? Like heavily involved with the smoking man.
Oh, she would be. She so would be.
Totally, without
Margaret point. Thatcher's holding people down and like dripping black oil into their faces to just be like, yes, this is why we took the Falklands back, because we had to drip oil in your faces from Antarctica.
We had to protect. Yeah.
All these shit's coming together.
I think Dick Cheney trained under Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. And when you say trained under, what do you mean? Are you trying to imply something, Brian?
Oh, enhanced. Interrogation tactics.
Oh, okay. Not the sensual thing that I was implying, but that's cool.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No,
I got a little too real.
Look, nobody should think about Margaret Thatcher and Dick Cheney having sex. I think that's probably the number one birth control form in the United States right now and globally.
Well, what was Thatcher's nickname? Is the Iron Lady? That was her nickname?
The Iron Lady. Yeah. Because she's made entirely out of iron.
Because she was on one of the X-Files episodes and was replaced by an iron robot.
Ah, yes. The Martian robot.
Right. Yeah. So now she's just wearing a skin suit.
And when you think about it, aren't we all just wearing a skin suit?
Well.
I'm just a skeleton covered with muscles trying to go about my day.
Covered with muscles, Nate?
Well, I mean, you know, covered with the essential amount of muscles. It's not like, I didn't say I was covered with like a lot of showy, glamorous muscles.
Giving you a hard time. just a skeleton covered with muscle.
Nate, are you really a martini, Nate? Are you really a martini?
Yes, I am secretly a martini. Poof, I just changed into my normal conical glass form. You all know the truth now. We've known each other for 20 years almost, and here I am, finally showing you that I'm just a martini glass. Extension beverage.
Margaret Thatcher? Are we still on Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, isn't everybody?
Oh, yeah. Give me some of that iron. She was also on the rise with Reagan. And so I think their austerity measures in both countries and the way they looked at how they handled the lower classes is a huge thing in history that maybe is not discussed as much about, or maybe our current Republicans think about Margaret Thatcher as well.
Oh, I'm sure they think that she's kind of a hero to look up to. Though lots of people would look
at her. They have an iron sculpture.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Hey, that was good. Great job on Margaret Thatcher. Jen Moore is leaving the mezzanine. So we're going to say bye-bye. Thank you for stopping in on the show.
My bed is calling. I love you guys, though. I was so happy to see you.
We should do this again.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. We'll make this happen. We'll pick an earlier day and a different day, and you can participate because now you got a taste for it. And I can tell. I can tell you're kind of interested.
Yeah.
You're kind of into this.
For sure. Team Martini.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye, guys. All right.
Good night.
Bye.
All right. Great job, Margaret Thatcher, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom from 1979 until 1990. That's a long time. It's a long ass time. Through most of our formative years, all three of us, our shared formative years. What a crazy thing. Leader of the Conservative Party, not a great lady, as far as history is concerned, when it comes to the way you treat people who don't have a lot of money. Just kind of on board with the neoliberal trickle-down version of politics, which I think we've all proven not the best. So, 2 points each. You're both spectacular. And we're gonna jump into round number four. Brian, do you have a vague idea about the Mark of Cain?
The Mark of Cain?
The Mark of Cain.
So we're talking about Cain and Abel?
We are, yeah.
In the Old Testament?
Absolutely.
Well, Cain had to kill Abel as a sacrifice for the Lord and to prove his worth. And I think Abel was the shepherd, and was Cain more into agriculture? I can't remember, but there was two competing ideas there too. So I don't remember though if Cain actually killed Abel or not, and I think he might have, which brought a more curse on the whole line of Adam and Eve. And there were also weren't they the children of Adam and Eve too?
They were, yeah, yes.
You got the Bible down, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Biblical scholar Brian Dixon on the podcast. Amazing.
I mean, like, wasn't Abel a shepherd who cared a lot about farming? I'm like, that's not the story I heard, but sure, makes a lot of sense.
I think Abel was the shepherd, and I think Cain was jealous that God seemed to love Abel more in whatever way God was conveying his love at the time.
Wait, are you giving the answer now, Nate?
No. I was just clarifying that. But yeah, Jenny, continue. Mark of Cain.
Well, I'm really glad Brian covered the biblical history because while, you know, having a religion major in undergrad, I also have some vague familiarity with the Bible story. I also watched Supernatural.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's just
Supernatural ran longer than the Bible.
To learn about the Mark of Cain, which was a curse. Because Cain killed his brother. And so, yeah, on Supernatural, I think Dean ends up with the Mark of Cain and he has to get it so that he can complete some task, but then he's stuck with it and he's cursed and they have to figure out how to get rid of it. And they meet Cain in the show, who's very sad.
Aw, because of murdering his brother.
Well, and then being out, he's cast out away from God because he murdered his brother. So, essentially, like, he's not allowed to die. Oh, I think that's why Dean gets the Mark of Cain, because he needs to not die or come back from dying or something. Anyway, Yeah, when they meet Kane, he's like, I think he's like drunk and friendless and has been living for millennia alone.
Interesting.
That's your point.
It doesn't seem like a bad consequence, though, I guess. Like, because he can still meet people in bars drunk. So it's not like it's that bad.
It didn't give the impression that he was going anywhere meeting people. He's just drinking alone in his gross house.
Oh, okay. But they knew where his gross house was, and they went and were like, hey, what's going on, Kane? How you doing?
He's got
and then they ask if they can have the curse so that they cannot die or something.
Okay. Because they probably have to bring back one of the girlfriends or something from the Hell Dimension. I've watched like 5 episodes of Supernatural total.
Oh, I'm on season like 14, I think now. I can't
out of 72.
That happens, but but yes, I think
Kane's not inviting
the Mark of Kane episode.
Okay,
he's great. Not inviting anybody over, y'all. He's got a frozen margarita machine. He's hooked up to the sludge.
Yeah, he's just. He's just pulling that one-armed bandit that delves out margaritas.
I think Kane would probably end up being a martini person. I mean, the way we describe martinis, like they're formal and sad at the same time, right? Yeah. Like Kane is not a partier. He's not fun. He doesn't want fruity drinks. He just like alcohol. He would not have a problem with the martini glass because
right.
He's not going anywhere. Right, he's just
yeah.
sitting.
He's himself. Literally sitting. He's just going
to
sit right in front of
the glass instead of trying to move the glass to his mouth.
This is painting a very sad word picture about. I mean, honestly, though, he killed his brother and kind of doomed humanity according to the Bible.
Right.
Yeah. The mark of Cain is pretty much what you guys have all talked about. It's a curse or a mark from the Bible on Cain, and no one's really sure exactly what the consensus origin is or what the mark is exactly, because the word as written in Genesis 4:15 could mean sign, omen, warning, remembrance, motion, gesture, agreement, miracle, wonder, or letter. So it could mean a whole lot of stuff. But he killed his brother, and the idea here is killed Abel, lied about the murder to God, and Cain basically just became cursed to run around the earth for a long time, I guess. I don't know. He can't farm well anymore. Like, when he farms, there will be no produce that is yielded for him.
Right. And instead of it coming instantly, now you have to toil for months on end and go through the cycle.
Yeah.
That was
they were, like, explaining weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great job. Great job on the mark of Cain. Brian, 1 point. Jenny, 2 points.
Woohoo!
And let's see. Oh, hey, it's time to play our second game. It's time to play Fuck, Marry, Kill. And this week on Fuck, Marry, Kill, you've got a real murderer's row of fellas to choose from. So Brian, we'll start with you. Who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry? And who are you going to kill among the following? Time-traveling teenager Marty McFly. Non-traveling sexual poet, the Marquis de Sade. And pipe-traveling mushroom-stomping plumber, Mario. Who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry? And who are you going to kill?
Well, obviously I'm going to screw Marquis de Sade.
Sure.
You would say that.
It would be... It would be a night to remember, and probably one that would leave a mark of Cain.
Yeah, the Old Testament.
Yeah. Flogging.
And then I think I would kill Mario just because it would be really fun. I mean, what's the evil villain? I can't remember.
Bowser.
Koopa?
Yeah, Bowser. King Koopa or Bowser. Both. He goes by both names.
Yeah, I mean, that looks like a lot of fun to be that guy. And then, obviously, kill would be McFly. That would be Mary, right?
Mary. You're going to marry Marty, yeah.
McFly would be fun to marry, yeah, just because, you know.
I mean, he did invent rock and roll by playing,
right.
by playing
right.
music in the 50s that already existed.
Right.
Yeah. He appropriated black music before it was cool by traveling back in time.
What a guy to marry.
I mean, he's got the money, you know, he's got a time machine. He's still got that DeLorean.
And skateboarding.
Yeah, you got a hoverboard. You could hang out. You could use a hoverboard while you're married to Marty. Dehydrated pizzas. There's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of benefits to marrying Marty McFly.
You also have to go to like the creepy Western cowboy world.
It's true. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to have to go back to 1885. And
not so cool. Not as cool as the hoverboard and the dehydrated pizza.
No. No, it's still, no matter how, I don't care how much you dress up a train into a time machine, it's still a train, and it's not that exciting.
Yeah, not the same.
Was there a Biff in the 1885 version?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was like Mutt Tannen or something, it's or like Mad Dog, I can't remember.
The great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because what the summary thesis of the Back to the Future movies is, douchebags have been in America at all points in history, and they will always be there. You will not get away from them.
And no matter, even if you had a time machine, they will still win, and you will still lose.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because you'll go to the future. Oh nope, he's turned into Donald Trump. We got super douche. Go to the back. No, he's killing people with his gun. It's terrible. Brian, great choices. Great choices. Jenny, who are you going to pick among those? Who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry?
Brian's choices make so much sense for Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
But my answers are totally different.
Okay.
So fuck Marty McFly.
All right. You like that puffy vest, huh?
First, like Michael J. Fox. And he's so cute. Bragging rights, right? But like, you don't actually want to be with that guy. He keeps disappearing.
Spends most of his time with an elderly scientist.
Yeah.
And no one knows how they met.
Goes away. You never know where he is or what he's doing. No, that's not like a long-term thing. But short-term, definitely. So fun. Mary, Mario, he's always out there getting coins.
This is true. It's literally his imperatives are saving you, as to the princess,
right,
and collecting money.
Yeah.
Like a plumber. That's literally what a plumber does.
Not that I'm interested in being taken care of in that way, but you know, if you have to be married to somebody, it's nice that they're productive. They have goals.
Literally a flag at the end of every day that you jump to and pull down.
Right. It's consistent. It's making progress. It's contributing. And most valuable to me, I don't think I'd have to take care of him at all.
Oh no, yeah, yeah.
I think he's probably got a union that does that.
This is true.
He's got a union.
Yeah.
Right. So, and with all that,
Brooklyn Pipe Fitters 410.
We lay a lot of pipe.
Which, hey, that's another upside to be married to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I end up killing Marquis de Sade, which I don't think is a big loss.
Yeah, no, I mean, he would be weird. He'd be creepy but the whole time.
I'm pretty vanilla, so. none of that interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. Not really interested in bondage, in lashings. Yeah, yeah, no, that tracks. Yeah.
Hurting people, getting hurt. No, no.
He was a revolutionary.
He was a bored criminal. He was in jail by himself. He only had his dick to play with. So, of course, he wrote about it. I mean.
Which, I mean, in all fairness, that is really what most of literature up until the year 2019 is about anyway. Just given the patriarchy and all. But.
I love that. Men left on their own too long produce great works of literature because their imaginations have to serve for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
They can't go play pipe.
I feel really bad that Jen's not here to witness this because I feel like we're really hitting our stride here. She's missing some quality stuff.
She'd miss out. She'd definitely have something to add.
Yes.
Great job on Fuck, Marry, Kill. You were both absolutely correct, and you both received 2 points.
Well-deserved points.
Oh, yeah. Damn right. Damn right. And now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing, and the only thing that's French about it is the name. We've,
I don't know any French.
We've known each other, the three of us, and the four of us. If Jen were here, this would still apply. We've known each other for a long time, and we've been through a lot. What, if anything, could mar, there's the mar, our decades-long friendship? Jenny.
Like, what could any of us do?
Yeah, or what anything. What could mar it? It's there. This is the super open-ended section. So just whatever. If, hey, maybe there's something that already did and you just want to air those grievances live on the show. Let's do it. Let's throw down. Brian, take your earrings out. It's time to fight.
And I'm pretty sure that if there were going to be something that would have ended our friendship, it would have happened like 15 years ago, because we're like fully grown adult human beings who are capable of taking care of ourselves. But when we met, we were mostly drunk.
Yeah. We could take care of ourselves, just we had to have a drink in our hands at the time.
Yeah.
And then sing a song.
We were all like trying to live our lives on like 10 grand a year.
Yeah, if that. God. But we all still had a fun time.
Well, fun was easy.
Well, I recall a martini and a margarita in both hands most of the time.
Right.
Yeah. Just double marring.
Yeah. I suppose a thing that could mar our friendship, not end it, but would mar it, would be if anybody on our call decided that they liked said person who will not be named, and was, you know, headed to Mar-a-Lago and falling into that's a hard sell for me.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. That would be a big problem.
People who have fallen into the QAnon crazy. But, you know, you can still handle them. It's just you try to avoid those parts of the conversation. So that would be hard. That would change our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Brian, any thoughts? What do you think? What would mar our friendship, our decades-long friendship? Or is it impossible to mar it? Maybe it's not.
Well, consider you can't really top Jenny's answer there. I got nothing, man. I got nothing. I got nothing to mar. I can only mar my answer.
Well, I think, you know, it's a thing where it's like, could you, if you killed somebody, would I stop being your friend? Nope. That's like part of the friendship is like, what happened? Why'd you do it? How can I help you?
Yeah. Yeah. They deserved it, I'm sure, because I've known you for too long to think otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what other things? It's really like caring more about money than people.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a real big one. I mean, and I think that's the only answer, because I sort of hoped that it would go this way when I wrote this question, because I was like, I can't think of anything that would for me. I can't think of any way that any of you would do to wrong me anyway. Like, you never have. We've always stood by each other really well, even when there have been incidences where we could have been split. We didn't split. Like, we all just have stuck together and managed to be like really good friends in that kind of fabled way where, you know, everybody talks about, oh, the friends you make at this point in your life are the kind of people that every time you see them, you just pick up where you left off. And we've always done that. I am so enchanted with the fact that we will get together. I like right before the pandemic, when we went to Brian's campus to see the vagina monologue stuff, like, we go there and we immediately are just like, it's like another day in Boulder in like 2006. It's like no time has passed. And we're just, you know, giddy kids having a fun time, laughing. Yeah.
That's how I like my friendships. Not a lot of maintenance.
Well, yeah. And
but a lot of fun. Like, right? Where it's just anytime you're with these people, it's easy. It's awesome. It's fantastic. I wish we could hang out more often, but we have horrible lives and jobs and.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've got distance. We've got pandemic that wrecked that. Cause I think that we were actually on path to hang out more. Like, we could have, hung out several times. And then
the world was like, no more hanging out ever.
The world is like, no. Nice try. Nice try, kiddos. But no, I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing. I don't know. Like, if either of you ever needed anything from me, all you have to do is ask. Like, I'm here. And just because it's not a complicated friendship, like, we don't have to check in with each other every other day to make sure that we're still friends, doesn't mean that, like, you know, I'll show up anytime. Anytime anybody needs me, I'll show up. And I know that you'll do the same. Like, if I was ever in a bad spot, I know who I'd talk to.
Yep.
I got one question.
Yeah.
You all still like me?
Well, Brian, I was gonna give you 5 points. I'm gonna take a point away because that belonged in the martyr syndrome section. No. Yeah, man. Brian and I have had so much fun, like not so much in the last year, but like getting together, having a couple drinks, talking about basketball, or like doing home projects. Like, I go over there and help Brian like install XYZ, something simple, but like I like doing that stuff for people. And that's what friendship really is just being like willing to do like and having fun with it. I think that's the other thing. Like, I've never not had a good time hanging out with Brian. I've never not had a good time hanging out with you, Jenny. Like, we always have a fun time.
I think you're right. I think the best friendships are the where you can help each other, but it's not transactional help.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not counting. Right. I don't care. Well, although you do both owe me substantial amounts of fun.
You help me, I'll help you. It's just like you can ask anytime for pretty much anything.
Yeah. Yeah, damn right. I know that, yeah, if there was a, let's say there was some sort of nuclear apocalypse and the only place we had to go was to your house, you'd be like, come on in, stay with me, help me fight off the mutants. And we'd do it.
Two mattresses in the unfinished basement, you're welcome to.
There you go. And the basement will be safest from the mutants because they'll be outside. So it's all perfect. Great job.
Anytime. You're welcome.
Great job on Les Choses Francaises Arbitraire. I'm awarding you each 5 points. Because friendship is golden. And so, here's what's interesting. We're going into the final topic. 1 point separates the two of you. Brian has 16 points. Jenny has 17 points. I have 1. Jen has 3. Neither of us are really participating. So, we're going to the final topic.
Brian would definitely have more points than me if we were playing basketball.
It's probably true. We should test that out.
Like, he would have all the points, and I would have, like, only pity points. You're so short, and you can't throw that ball very far, and you have no aim.
Also, you said throw the ball, which is not really basketball terminology, and that's fine, you know.
She's just a chucker. She's a chucker.
Yeah.
Throw it.
Okay. When we're allowed to see people again. We're getting together on a basketball court and we're going to play like just a game of one-on-one.
Uh-huh.
It'll be so much fun.
Sure.
Cause I think Brian's the only one among us who has bothered to play basketball over any period of recent time. Ever. So any memory of me being able to shoot is really just that. I'm going to go out there and be like, oh, airball.
I think I could probably get an H if we played horse for like 4 hours.
All right.
Oh, that's awesome.
So here's the deal. 1 point separates you. We're going to the final topic. As everyone knows who listens to this show, the winner literally wins all the marbles. All the marbles. I personally post cash on delivery several thousand pounds of brand new marbles to the winner of the show. You have to accept them. The driver is instructed not to leave. He is armed. He will stay in your driveway until you take the marbles and pay him. But it's your prize for winning the show. So here we go with the final topic. Oh God, we're recording this so late. This is great. Brian, you get the first crack at the final topic. Do you have a vague idea about the stock market?
Oh my gosh. it's this mythical place somewhere. somewhere in Lower Manhattan. You know, I don't know how you describe such zeros and ones on a board. I don't, it's a place where commodities can be exchanged. Commodities being like your food, maybe other services. But also people can bet on future stock. Banks can bet, as we found out in the financial crisis, that banks can bet your mortgage that you'll go into default. It's such a bizarre place, and I don't know, penny stocks. I mean, oh my God, what the hell does that mean? Short sell Anyway, it's a place to make money.
That's good.
Suddenly sounds like me describing basketball. Like, yes. Penny stocks, short sell. Like, I'm like, free throw.
Dribble.
No.
Tall people.
Yeah.
Jenny, yeah, what can you add about the stock market?
I like Brian's idea of it being a magical place, but I think of it more as it's magical because it's not real. What's being traded is your hope that it's like the idea of credit, right? Credit is your hope that money, there will be more money in the future. You'll be able to afford more, things will have more value. So the stock market is this like very bizarre place where you put value on hope. But the people who are trading don't care about hope. They care about money. So, and everything I've learned about the stock market has happened recently from my undergraduate students who are all obsessed with the GameStop trading situation and have tried to explain it to me. And I'm like, so the stock market is a place. Oh, a student in a presentation. The stock market is a place where gambling is legal.
Yes.
That's what it is. The stock market is legal gambling for rich people, where gambling is illegal or, you know, limited because that's for poor people.
Right. Yeah. Because you're not allowed, if you're poor, you're not allowed to make money quickly without working because someone needs to exploit your labor.
Yes.
But if you're already rich, you obviously can't be exploited anyway. Yeah.
Enough.
Oh, certainly.
Someone in your family, maybe not even you, but previous generations worked sufficiently to make enough money that you no longer have to work because you've worked your way out of the system of labor.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very astute. Well said. Yeah. I like what you said about the stock market being a place where you trade hope with people who don't believe in hope.
Yeah. Well, that's how they win money.
Oh yeah. No, I mean that is what the GameStop thing indicates to us, right? Is that for all of the sort of postulating that this is about observing the performance of companies and putting money into companies that are worth backing for their continued success, it actually turns out that no, it's really just how do people feel? All you're ever betting on day to day with the stock market is, are people feeling good about the stock market today? Or are they feeling bad about the stock market today? And if they're feeling bad about the stock market, you better notice and get out before they feel so bad that you lose all your money. And if they're feeling good about it, you better hope they're still feeling good tomorrow. And that's kind of the game.
It is. That's the game. But you're reading the numbers to see how the game is working.
Right.
And so that takes a lot of math.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes kind of a weird, I mean, it takes just a strange perception of all of it. It totally alters the perception of what money is and what the value of a business growing is. Because, I mean, one thing the stock market does that is very toxic for our reality is that it implies that the only way for a business to be successful is for it to grow perpetually, which of course we know that like nothing can grow perpetually without being cancer. Like that's the only thing in the natural world that grows forever in all directions and gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more powerful and devours everything around it, right? Like
cancer, just now that you brought up cancer is immortality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like that's the cells keep growing because they've had their telomeres shortened. So they never die. And it is. It's exactly what you're saying. It's not sustainable because if nothing ever dies, then nothing can live.
Yeah. Because we need a natural turnover of things. And cancer doesn't allow even for the ship of Theseus to occur where you replace the boards to question whether the thing is the same thing, but at least because we're all just that anyway, right? We're all just a constant turnover of cells, and the economy should be a constant turnover of wealth. There should be people who have wealth and they should lose that wealth and someone new should get it. But instead we have a system now that's predicated on the idea that everybody who has wealth can keep having more wealth and somehow people below them can get wealth. But
I'm going to say, Nate, not just the people who have wealth can get more wealth, but our system is predicated on the people who have wealth should get more wealth.
Yeah. Even must. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's terrifying. It's terrifying when you really think about it.
Well, especially I read a thing today that a billionaire, if you made $1 million every day for, I don't know, they said like 10 years or something, you still wouldn't have $1 billion, right?
Yeah. Cause it's 1,000 million to get to 1 billion.
Like you couldn't
you'd have to make $1 million for more than 3 years. Every single day, you'd have to make $1 million a day.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
too much. Oh, no. Yeah. And the idea that there are people who are someone's a trillionaire, right? Bezos is a trillionaire, maybe, or at least was pre-divorce. Like, yeah, it's insane. It's insane. Yeah. That was the other meme that was earlier in the pandemic was like, hey, if these like top five rich guys gave everyone in the country $3,000 out of their own money, they would still have made money during the pandemic. They still would be richer than they were when it started, even if they gave everybody in the country $3,000.
That's crazy.
Which is like, $3,000 is nothing to sneeze at for me. I don't think for any of us. Like, we would gladly be like, oh, cool, $3,000 that I wasn't expecting. I'm in.
Totally.
Golly.
And it wouldn't be like, oh, cool, I'm going to put gold filigree on my yacht. It would be like, hey, I'm gonna not be afraid of dying for a month. That'll be cool. Right. Hey, great job on the stock market.
Poets who know what the stock market is. That's amazing. And then proceeded to talk about magical places and imaginary money. Like, this is why we're poets.
Well, yeah, but it's also why we're necessary for society, right? Somebody's got to, Jesus isn't around anymore. Somebody's got to flip these money changers tables, and that's why we're here.
He has to do something.
Truer words have never been spoken. Somebody, he does have to do something. And God damn it, maybe it'll be us.
Maybe it'll be somebody else.
It could be. It really could be. Oh, man. Probably. It probably will be. Because we're going to be writing a poem about the person who does the thing.
Right. We'll create things that maybe that will inspire somebody who can actually solve the problem. Because we're just writers. We don't actually solve problems. We just
never
comment on them.
Never.
Yeah. We speak to the spiritual destruction caused by the problem.
Right.
Yes.
We point out that there is a problem.
Yeah.
And then we rely on others to solve it.
Yeah. But we're an essential part of the recovery process. If no one, we admit we have a problem, and then someone else has to take the action to do something about it.
So self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah. So
criticizing until this problem is resolved.
If we could make money doing that, that would be all I'd do. Right. I'm really good at already writing critical letters to things that I don't like. So
me too.
If you would send me $50 for doing that, I'll do it all the time.
50? What kind of, I mean, let's go a little higher, Nate. You can
charge you're right. Couple hundred dollars a letter. Great job on the stock market. Brian, 3 points. Jenny, 4 points. And that means that Jenny, you are the winner this week with 21 points.
Do I expect my Truco marbles?
Well, there's been a little bit of a supply chain interruption due to the pandemic. So a lot of the marbles are currently sitting in the port of Los Angeles, kind of waiting for them to clear customs. But I imagine sometime between 2022 and 2025, the marbles should arrive, at which point you will be required to pay the balance for receipt.
Right. Okay. If you could just let me know how much that'll be so I can start playing the stock market now.
Any stocks?
And send me the tracking number.
Yeah, the tracking number for the marbles is 2. So you just go ahead and type 2 into your internet browser. 2 marbles usually works, and then you'll see that it's coming your way. But yeah, so Jenny, congratulations, you won!
Thank you.
How exciting! Brian won the last time he was on the show, so this is just like we're just rolling through. Everybody's getting a chance. We're just getting a chance to win. Jenny, do you have anything that you'd like to plug that you want the listeners to know about, that you want them to do, that you want them to read, listen to, see, absorb? Any stocks, any hot stock tips?
No, no hot stock tips. Anything to do? I can't even think of a single thing right now.
Don't do anything.
I read a cool book. It was called Language Unlimited.
All right. By whom?
He's British. I don't remember his name, but it was about, you know, grammar.
Okay. So presumably the name is something like Alistair Cumberbatch.
Yes. Something like that. Let me see. Sure.
You know, grammar?
No, his name is super easy. It's David Adger.
Adger? A badger without the B.
Yes, exactly.
There you go.
But it was super fascinating and talked about like the hierarchy of language and how the creative power. So how do we actually put things together so that other people can understand them? And there are a couple of competing theories that he talks about, and he's a Chomsky follower. So it's like, there's the argument for the universal grammar, and his whole thing is like, it seems like there is a universal grammar because if an alien came to our planet, listened to all of our languages, it would think that we all spoke dialects of the same language since all the languages work in the same way.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Cool. That sounds really, really interesting. Good plug. Yeah.
Well, so, I can also plug my own things, but I don't know.
No, plug your things. Yeah. Plug them.
Well, the most exciting thing I did in the pandemic was create online courses for my business. So if you go to online.appendence.com, there's courses on how better business writing, how to become a better business writer. So many people write for their jobs, which means they are professional writers, or they might feel more comfortable with writers or professionals who write. So what I do in the courses is walk people through like what are some of the habits and strategies that we as poets have learned to connect with our audiences that are really simple so that other people who are writing for their jobs can make that easier and faster and sound nicer to their audiences and clearer and more concise and all of those things. So
they can stop sending emails like "you got 5 minutes?" question mark, and then have to send 7 more emails explaining what the 5 minutes is for.
It's for. And mostly why. So they can stop sending emails that start with "I'm writing you."
Oh yeah. "I'm writing you to inquire about the location of TPS report 2K614. Yeah.
This letter is to inform you that can you start a little bit later in the sentence? Like "I'm writing you." Yes. That's what I'm reading.
I'm here. I'm here in the email. I'm looking at it.
I'm emailing
you. You're not on my phone, so I assume you're writing me. Yeah.
I'm reaching out to you. Mm-hmm. So mostly I teach people how not to start with narrating what they're doing and start with stuff that the people on the other end actually care about.
"I am currently in an office. I am wearing pants and I wish to speak to you, but you are not in the room. Therefore, I have decided to use this mode of communication. It is an email."
It is an email. Please open it.
Yeah. "Now that you've opened my email, I would like to take a moment to tell you why I have bothered to send you this email." Yeah.
And then ending with, "Now that I told you that, thank you."
Yeah. Do you think that some of that has to do with the sort of formalized misteaching of the 5-paragraph essay in public education, where people think like, okay, I need an opening, a body, and a closing. And because I have to write 5 paragraphs, I'm going to waste a lot of words filling space because I don't really think that just my thought is enough.
I think that it does have to do with our education, and you've hit on a number of points that I talk about. Like when we give people page limits or word limits or the 5-paragraph essay, people have enough language to fill that. They don't necessarily have enough thoughts to fill it. So they will find enough language to reach the page limit, which teaches people to go out into the world and write emails write anything, write business plans, write reports that are long because they've been trained to write long messages. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They also have been trained, and I think this is until I got to creative writing work, think about all your education in writing is teaching you to get your thoughts out of your head, and you're writing it for a teacher. But very little of your writing actually has an impact in the world, like actually has an audience who you're trying to communicate to. So you get through school and all you've learned to do is to narrate your own ideas, but you haven't learned how to craft those ideas so that someone else can read them.
Or be compelled by them.
And, yeah. And those are different skills. And And so that's what I've built my business teaching, is just how do we give professionals the skills so that they can write simple messages, easy, clear, not full of, I read one today. Oh my gosh, if I had time to share it with you guys, it is such an academic writing an email that is one giant block of text and says virtually nothing the entire time. And you're just like, oh God, why do you do this to people when you could just say, the meeting is now on Tuesday, March 23rd.
Yeah. So yeah, listeners, you heard that. The meeting is on Tuesday, March 23rd. And if you're available, tweet at me, at Nate Regolia. Great. Jenny, that's so awesome. Online.appendence.com. I will put a link in the show notes too, so people can check out your stuff. Thank you again for being on the show, and congratulations on your victory. Brian, what would you like to plug?
A couple of things, like a highlight in January was with a writer friend of mine, I took her kind of flash fiction writing intensive 2-week little workshop retreat and, you know, cranked out 16 stories. And
wow,
those are all going into the flash novel. So I'm up to 80 pages and I'm happy. I'm excited.
Hell yeah. That's great.
And then, and the other thing is at the community college, you know, we're about to publish our 40th anniversary issue, which I just think is such a big deal for a community college. We got 40 years of a journal.
Oh yeah.
And I think it's going really strong. So I'm pretty proud of what's going down in that scene.
That's really stupendous, considering the number of like kind of prominent journals at liberal arts colleges that have folded over the last 5 years, to be community college still rolling with a journal. And to have a community as robust as what you've got too. I mean, it's not like, it's not lilting or anything. It's for real.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels good to be a part of something like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's so great.
What's the name of it? Where do we find it?
It's Hourglass. It publishes only student work, but we wanted to keep it that way. And you know, the good vibes have been there. Like 2 years ago, the journal won the Humanities Association National Award for that level of like a you know enrollment and stuff like that go along for that level. So and that award covers like content in addition to design, so like overall sort of aspects of just wonderful stuff, man.
That's awesome.
Very cool. Yeah, I will put a link for Hourglass, for CCD's Hourglass, so people can check that out. And if you're a student, you can submit an entry through the website that I will link, but you're probably not a student, so don't waste people's time, guys.
Don't read.
All right.
Didn't work, right?
But yeah, but buy the journal and read it and enjoy it. Devour it voraciously. Thank you, Brian, for being on. Thank you for making time to do this. It's so nice. It's so nice to see both of you and to see Jen Moore. Jen Moore, hi. You're not here, but we're going to say hi bye to you.
Hope you're sleeping.
Yeah. We hope you're fast asleep, even if someone's listening to this episode at 1 in the afternoon.
Right.
Just
whenever, Jen Moore is still sleeping.
Yeah, whenever anybody's listening, Jen Moore is asleep. But yeah, it's just
sleep for now.
this is the fairy tale kind of Snow White or Sleeping Beauty situation. This is the enchanted spinning wheel that marks her demise. But yeah, thank you both so much for being on. This has been a blast. Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. You can leave us some stars on the Apple Podcasts. You can do that on Stitcher or on even Pandora at this point. You can say that you enjoy this. And if you don't, you can say that you don't. I'm open to criticism. But, you know, don't be too mean, I guess, if you can avoid it. You can also find us on social media. We have a Facebook group, the Vague Idea Podcast Online Group Thing. We also have the A Vague Idea Podcast Network page on Facebook featuring all four of our podcasts. This one, our Dungeons & Dragons podcast, Roll for Blank, our Sex in the City podcast, Funky Spunk, and our Denver Nuggets podcast, The Hard Pick Mining Company. So check all those out. You might as well listen to somebody talk to you, because you're alone all the time. And if you're not, why are you spreading disease? Otherwise, if you like our theme song, you should check out Michael J. O'Connor's music on Bandcamp, michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. He's really phenomenal. He's got like dozens of records and EPs that he's put out. He's a prolific musician and a great listen. So yeah, we have, the three of us, And the four of us, with Jen Moore included, though she's asleep perpetually, have all had a vague idea about Mar today. And that's a good thing, because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye!
Bye!
Bye! Thanks for having us.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, Ms. Shannon Page, and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Space Boy books at readspaceboy.com.